Why are the reading and writing skills of public school students deteriorating? Why are SAT scores in trouble? Why is the government in the education business? Why are student morals declining faster than test scores? And what can Christians do? Hi, I'm Brad Lee. Our guest on Spotlight today, who will answer these and other questions, is Dr. Samuel Blumenfeld, a writer, educator, and chairman of the Massachusetts branch of the Reading Reform Foundation. Sam, welcome to Spotlight.
Nice to be with you, Brad.
Appreciate you coming along.
Yeah.
Apparently, in your opinion, these problems are not new.
Well, no, particularly the reading problem. We've known about that problem since at least 1955, when Dr. Rudolph Flesch wrote his famous book, Why Johnny Can't Read. So we've been dealing with this problem now for over 30 years, and it even goes back much further back than that. I mean, so this is nothing new, and things are simply getting worse. As a matter of fact, now with whole language in the schools, I anticipate that the reading problem will get severely worse.
Mm. That's not a good evaluation of how our schools are doing.
No, one has to face reality. I mean, I've been working with in the literacy field now since 1962, when I first became aware of the reading problem. And I wrote a book, The New Illiterates, in 1972 to bring the situation up to date, because I had been teaching as a substitute in the high schools and junior highs of a Boston suburb, and I was amazed that the children were reading so poorly. And this was, you know, many years after Rudolph Flesch had identified the problem. He said that the reason why the children weren't learning to read is because they weren't being taught correctly.
The methodology you're referring to?
Pardon?
The methodology?
That's exactly right. And he explained that how in the early 1930s, the professors of education changed the way reading is taught in American schools. They threw out the alphabetic phonics method, which is the proper way to teach children to read an alphabetic writing system, and they put in this new sight, whole word, or look-say method that teaches children to read English as if it were Chinese, an ideographic writing system. And he said that when you impose an ideographic teaching technique on an alphabetic writing system, you get reading disability.
So in other words, they're taught, instead of to sound out the word by the syllables and letters, they're just taught to recognize the words. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they're taught a sight vocabulary, to look at each word as if it were a little picture. As a matter of fact, the leading professor of reading in the United States, Professor Kenneth Goodman, calls reading a psycholinguistic guessing game. And he told a reporter from the New York Times that if the child sees the word horse and says pony, that's okay, because the child is seeing the picture, getting the meaning. So as you can see, it creates very inaccurate, poor readers who are not going to be able to fare very well in later life, because there is a big difference between a horse and a pony.
I would imagine that a big side effect of that method is a very limited vocabulary.
Exactly. You see, a sight vocabulary limits the child's ability to expand not only his reading vocabulary, but his speaking vocabulary, because as you know, Brad, most of the new words we learn come from our reading, not from hearing them in the general conversation area. You really cannot expand your use of language, your ability to handle the written word and as well as the spoken word, if you do not have phonics, if you are not taught to read phonetically. You see, you must become a phonetic reader in order for reading to be easy and enjoyable. If you are a sight reader, it becomes a terrible chore. It becomes very difficult and very unpleasant. I know one man, for example, who was a sight reader, and he told me he would rather be beaten than have to read, which gives you an idea of how psychically painful that method of teaching can be to a person who wants to read but simply does not have the ability.
Now, this points to another whole area of our culture today, which really discourages reading, the television and so on. So you're pointing to a principle that, for all practical purposes, people don't read today.
Well, they don't read today not so much because of television, but because they don't enjoy reading. It's not easy for them It's much easier to just put on a TV set and lean back and become a passive couch potato.
Yeah.
But people who are phonetic readers enjoy reading. They read on airplanes. They read wherever they can. I mean, you see people reading all the time in America. But what has happened is that because people have such low sight vocabularies that our reading material has also been dumbed down considerably.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the popular novels that people are reading these days, you will notice that the sentences are very short. There are not very many multisyllabic words.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of space on the page, usually.
Yeah.
That's because to accommodate these people, the Americans, who can no longer handle the written word like our ancestors could, like our forefathers. I mean, you know, if you look at the documents and the newspapers and the books that George Washington and the Adamses were reading in those days, my God, that would be impossible for today's people.
Yeah, yeah, they displayed a command of the language.
Well, because that's the way education was given. It was it was considered most important to make people highly literate, first of all, because this was a Bible-based country. And scripture was most important. Scripture was the basis of the country. You had to know the Bible.
Yeah.
And so you were taught to read very early so that you could become Bible literate. And, of course, Bible literacy makes it easy to become literate in general. But that's the reason why the Protestant states, not only here in the United States, but in Europe, emphasized reading and literacy and the teaching of Latin and Greek and Hebrew. Matter of fact, those three languages, Latin, Greek, and Hebrew, were taught at Harvard College when it was first founded in the wilderness. So you can see that there was a tremendous emphasis on language development, and of course that also helps you helps your mind develop. It helps you think better, because, you know, thinking is done in terms of words. We use language as the tool of thought. And if you don't have much language under your belt, then you're not going to be able to do much thinking either.
Yeah, yeah, because you think in these concepts of the words that have accumulated in your vocabulary, right?
Exactly, and you cannot conceptualize unless you have enough words to be able to do that. And if you listen to today's youngsters who come out of school, they have a very stunted vocabulary.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, I think they've got, you know, pizza and hot dog and hamburger and a few other words. That's about it. You know?
Absolutely. We're talking to Dr. Sam Blumenfeld about the condition of the schools in our country today. Not just about the condition, but we have some solutions to these problems. We'll have more Spotlight right after this. And welcome back to Spotlight. We're talking to Sam Blumenfeld, who is informing us the condition of the public schools today is not very good. The students are not learning how to read or write. Morals are declining. But, Sam, you're not only telling us that things are bad, you have a solution. You wrote a book in 84 called Alpha Phonics. Tell us about it.
Well, when I wrote my book, The New Illiterates, in which I informed American parents what was happening and how poorly the schools were teaching children to read, I realized that I had to give the parents something that they could use in order to make up for the deficiencies of the schools. And so I wrote two books, How to Tutor and Alpha Phonics. The How to Tutor book tells parents how to teach their children reading, writing, and arithmetic in the traditional manner, reading phonetically, writing cursively, and traditional arithmetic. And then I produced Alpha Phonics, which is a tutoring book, which can be used to teach anyone to read our English alphabetic system. And it's a very systematically done book. It starts very simply, and all the instructions are in the back. You don't have to take a special course in order to teach a child to read. You can do it just with that book. And these books are now being used by thousands of homeschoolers all across the country. Very successfully, we've had children as young as 3 and a half start learning to read, and and completing the course in their fourth year. So, I'm very pleased with the results, and I'm glad that these books are available to the public, because there is such a desperate need. And as you know, there is a program that's being constantly advertised over the radio. Which is a good phonics program, but uh-huh. it's much more expensive than mine. Let's put it that way.
Oh, I see. Okay. Now, your books, as far as tutoring and the alphaphonics method of teaching a child how to read, is done from a homeschool perspective, is it not?
Yes, but it can also be used by teachers in schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, these instruction methods are methods that were used for hundreds of years. I've made some innovations and some changes, and I've also arranged the sequence of instruction in such a way to make it as easy as possible, as least confusing as possible, because we have a 26-letter alphabet, but we have 44 sounds in our language. And if you only have 26 letters to stand for 44 sounds, you have, you've got a few problems. You mm-hmm. know, some of our letters stand for more than one sound, and mm-hmm. some of our sounds are represented by more than one letter. And so you have to teach our system very systematically and very logically, which is what I do. And the results have been most gratifying.
Hmm.
So I was right in thinking, in working it out in that way, and it enables children to become good phonetic readers with... they have to do some work. They've got to write, they've got to read, and all of that. And mm-hmm. there's plenty of drill. Because the most important component in learning to read phonetically is to develop an automatic association between the letters and sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And for generations, that was done through simple drill, you know, drilling the child in the consonant-vowel combinations, such as baby, bi, bo, bu, may, me, my, mo, mu, babet. Mm-hmm. Ab, ab, ib, ab, ab, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have similar drills, not quite like that, but quite similar, which enable the child to develop this automatic association so that they don't have to stop and laboriously sound out every letter, because mm-hmm. it has to become automatic, and you need drill to create that automatic ability.
Sure. I would think, since you're pointing out the phonic nature of your method, I would think, on the flip side, one of the weakest things about teaching a child with the sight method of reading is that in the English language, so many words have two, three, or four meanings, it's a total confusion.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the sight method causes the symptoms of dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you see, the child is expected to look at this word as a whole, and so he may look at a word backwards, forwards, upside down. There's no control, you see.
Hmm.
A phonetic reader must read from left to right because the letters are arranged in the same sequence in which the sounds are uttered,
mm-hmm.
you see. But if a child is looking at a word as a little picture, well, there's no law that says you've got to look at the picture from the left. I mean, when you go into a museum, you don't look at a picture from the left to the right.
Yeah.
You see something that first grabs your attention. And then you look at the picture. You know, there's something that strikes you in the picture, and then you look at it as a whole. You may look at it on the top or the bottom. Well, it's the same when a child is trying to learn a sight word. He's got to find something in the word that will remind him of what it means. I mean, take the word horse, for example. It doesn't look like a horse.
Mm-hmm.
So how does a child see a horse in that word? Well, any way he can.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no control, you see. And because the children are encouraged to read backwards and forwards, they reverse letters, they read backwards, they guess at words.
Mm-hmm.
A typical sight reader, and I've had many of them read aloud to me because I do tutor them, a typical sight reader will read along rather rapidly, but you'll notice as you're following them that they leave out words that are there, they put in words that aren't there, they truncate words. For example, they'll see a word like newspaper and they say paper, or a word like telephone and they say phone.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of thing they do. And they guess at words, they skip words, they do all kinds of things. But in other words, they become very inaccurate, poor readers, and they often lose the meaning of what they're reading because they've skipped some very important words, you know.
Now, in my experience, when I finally got to college, I found that my reading skills were not what they should be, so I took a speed reading course. It was a course that taught me how to study as well.
Yes.
But I look back on the experience, and because I had been taught phonically to read,
yes.
I picked right up on this. Now, with the children who are learning how to read by sight, how is a speed reading course going to help them?
Well, I don't know how it can help them except to make more errors. That's
uh-huh.
about it. In other words, generally in speed reading, you're taught to have your eyes take in more of the text, you know.
Right.
Like larger phrases and rather than word for word.
But then a very important part is retention.
That's right, to retain it, you see.
You can read it a mile a minute, but if you don't remember half of what you read, why bother reading that fast?
That's true. But generally, sight reading is, speed reading is good for scanning, for
uh-huh.
example. If you have to do a lot of reading for
right.
a course,
right.
You'll do a lot of scanning, but you'll slow down to read something that's important.
Uh-huh.
You know, if it's an important idea or concept that has to be really learned, you're going to slow down and read it word for word.
Yeah.
But, you know, people like myself who are in the writing and editing business and do a lot of research, I have to do a lot of scanning or else I'll be spending days reading a lot of non-pertinent material.
Mm-hmm.
So speed reading does, teach you the good scanning techniques.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Sam, thank you for joining us here on Spotlight. We'll be back with more. We're talking to Sam Blumenfeld, author of Alpha Phonics and How to Tutor, and we'll be back with more Spotlight right after this. And welcome back to Spotlight. We're talking to Sam Blumenfeld, author of Alpha Phonics and How to Tutor. He has a method for teaching your child how to read. And I understand, Sam, you're going to be in town this next week, Valley Forge Hilton on Thursday?
Yes, yes.
And can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be talking about?
Well, I will be talking about, you know, what is wrong with the schools and what are the alternatives that parents have.
Uh-huh.
And I will be discussing, you know, some of the problems, some of this OBE business, outcome-based education controversy, adding some views to that.
Uh-huh.
But basically, I'm interested in getting parents to see that they can do a lot at home.
Uh-huh.
They don't have to be totally dependent on the schools.
Okay.
And that'll be basically my message. And there will be books available there.
Okay. Do you have the times and dates and all that?
To tell you the truth, I don't have
them.
Okay.
Well, I have it here. I'll give it to the listeners, and then we'll repeat it at the end. Thursday, March 11th, 7:30 p.m. at the Valley Forge Hilton. That's at 251 West DeKalb Pike in King of Prussia. And for ticket information, the listeners can call 624-3427. That's 624-3427. Let's shift gears just a little bit, Sam. And you've written another book called The NEA, Trojan Horse in American Education. Now,
yes.
From what I understand, this is why, the things you talk about in this book are why our schools are in the condition they're in.
Yes. Well, what that book does is it gives the virtually the entire history of our education system
mm-hmm.
and how it has come to be what it is today.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, it centers on the National Education Association because they have become such a powerful political force
mm-hmm.
in our country. As a matter of fact, I would say they're perhaps more powerful than any of the political parties because
mm.
they have a membership of over 2 million now.
Mm.
And they've got members in every school district who are very active in politics.
Hmm.
And their real clout is on the local level.
I mean,
for example, they didn't like Reagan, but they weren't able to defeat him. And they didn't care for Bush in his first term, and they weren't able to defeat him. But they were able to get, they helped Clinton a great deal.
Yeah.
The teachers were very much behind Clinton because they consider him to be the savior of this, what I call this sick dinosaur called public education. I mean, it's really obsolete.
Hmm.
It's a 19th century anachronism that is not working. And as a matter of fact, that is the reason why they're going into this outcome-based education. They think that they can save the system by this revolutionary change that they want to make. But I don't think it's going to save the system at all. I think the system is just going to even get worse because it's going to lose its moorings entirely.
Well, now you mentioned OBE. We've heard a lot about that here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
What was it that made the NEA decide that the public schools would be a laboratory for social experiments to remold society?
Well, that goes back quite some time. The progressives have been using public education as a means of changing society. You see, the progressives were socialists. John Dewey and his colleagues were out-and-out socialists, and they believed that America should become a socialist country. But they realized that Americans were not about to give up their private property or their religions or, you know, their individualism.
Now, we're talking back in the 1800s.
Yeah, yeah. John Dewey wrote all of this in the 1890s. But then he lived until, I think he died in the 1940s or early 50s.
Yeah.
In any case, he was the leader of the philosophical leader of this movement to change America, to use the education system as a means of changing America into a socialist system.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Dewey and his colleagues who decided to shift the emphasis in education away from academics, away from intellectual development, to socialization.
Now, how did they do that?
Well, they did that by changing the curriculum. They spent 20 years, they had commissions and groups and all kinds of activities going on to change the basic curriculum of the public school, and in fact, the change from phonetics, from alphabetic phonics, to look, say, was part of that curriculum change in order to de-emphasize the teaching of reading, to de-emphasize the development of the intellectual skills, because, as you know, reading is key to the development of intellect.
Sure.
And so what they did was they shifted the emphasis entirely over to socialization, or the what we call today the affective domain. And unfortunately, that is what the OBE is going to concentrate on now, what they call the holistic child, and they're going to be dealing with the with attitudes. They believe that now they have to deal with the whole child, and they talk about dealing with the spiritual and the intellectual and the moral aspects of a growing child. For example, they're concerned with emotional, spiritual, physical, and intellectual development of the child from age zero on to 18. So, in other words, they're taking on even more than they ever, you know, thought they'd be able to do. That's why the plan can't possibly succeed, because it's too idealistic. It's too visionary. It's not grounded in reality. That's the problem with it. And of course, all of these people have been, you know, beginning with John Dewey, et cetera, have been trying to change America by using the school system as the means of indoctrinating the children. And the result is, listen, it didn't work in Russia for 70 years, so why would it work here?
You know,
the Russians had 70 years of communism and controlled, they had a dictatorship that controlled education from day one, and yet that system failed. Why? Because it was totally contrary to human nature.
Well, now time is moving on, but simply put, you feel that the root of the problem is the fact that the NEA has evolved into a political organization, a labor union.
Right. And as a matter of fact, that's the only way that they can stay and keep this system going, this obsolete system going, is by controlling politics, because it's a political system. It's a government system that is supported by the taxpayers. You know, if any private corporation did as poorly as public education, it would have gone out of business a long time ago.
It seems like the more money the government spends on education, the less the children learn.
Absolutely, because all of these programs that are now in place cost a lot of money, and the more money you spend on them, the worse it gets. For example, now they have this whole language in the schools, which is very expensive. And the more money you give the educators, the more miseducation you get. That's the sorry truth about the matter.
Okay, well, we're almost out of time, Sam, but briefly, what can a Christian do in light of the information that you've given us today?
Well, what a Christian can do is take the education of their children in hand and do it at home with the books that I've written, and there are certainly lots of other books available. Attend homeschooling conferences and book fairs and see what's happening, or find a good Christian school, and a school that you have confidence in, and give your children that God-centered education, which is so important.
Hmm.
You know, the main failure of public education today is the removal of God from
mm-hmm.
the system.
Yeah, we're aware of that.
Because, yes, because I believe that education without God is not really education.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, call it what you like, but it's not true education, because knowledge of God, I believe, should be at the top,
mm-hmm.
should be at the top priority of an education system.
Sam, thank you very much. Our guest today has been author and educator Sam Blumenfeld. Sam, thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
And for more information on Sam Blumenfeld's Alpha Phonics or How to Tutor or the Blumenfeld Education Letter, which we didn't really have a chance to talk about, but Sam, I understand the listeners can get a free introductory copy of that. Is that right?
Yes, free sample copy by just calling my publisher, and his number is 1-208-343-3790. That's 1-208-343-3790. 90. If they call that number, they can get a free sample copy of the newsletter, and my publisher will send them information about the books also.
Okay. And if they choose to write, you can write to Paradigm Company, Post Office Box 45161, Boise, Idaho 83711. And don't forget that Sam will be at the Valley Forge Hilton in King of Prussia Thursday, March 11th, 7:30 p.m. And for ticket information, you can call 624-3427. That's 624-3427. Well, thanks for tuning in today. I'm Brad Lee. Have a great day. We'll see you next time on Spotlight.